Well, Jesus had some really radical things to say about following him, about being disciples. Do those words still apply to us today?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Talk about things happening just on time at the very last minute. Got to the hotel tonight here in Vishakhapatnam, India, after a beautiful time of ministering to pastors and leaders. Got in. Everything looked like we were going to connect without any problem. Grabbed a quick meal. Hadn't eaten much today. Came back, and we couldn't connect, and we're scrambling and trying everything we knew how. I put up some Facebook prayer requests. Pray we can't connect. And got on Skype, made a Skype phone call so that we'd have a backup system. But we wanted to do it. High quality, studio quality here from India. And 3 minutes before the show was about to start, we successfully connected. Whatever the difficulties were overcome. Thank you, those that prayed for us. And it is my delight to be coming your way live from India. Would you all just do me a favor and just kind of just take a deep breath? And it's 11:31 in the evening here in India. And here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Or as always, you can weigh in on our website, askdrbrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. I have some stories to share with you tonight that will bless you, that will challenge you, that will encourage you. And I want to bring a challenge as well from the Word of God. It's Tuesday, and even though we're all the way over here in India, it's still Tuesday, which means teaching day, focusing on the Word or theology or apologetics or practical living. And I want to talk to you about some of the radical sayings of Jesus. I believe it was Mark Twain, who was anything but a believer, Mark Twain, who said something like, it's not the passages in the Bible that I don't understand that give me a hard time. It's the passages that I do understand. And some of the clearest, most straightforward teachings anywhere in Scripture come from the lips of Jesus himself, come from the words of Jesus. Undeniably clear and radical. But if they're true, if they apply to us today, I mean, how many of us are even saved? And what do we do with those radical words of Jesus that unless we leave everything we have, we can't be his disciples? That we have to deny ourselves and take up our cross in order to be disciples? That no man, having put his hand to the plow and looking back, is fit for the kingdom? That to a would-be disciple, Jesus said, foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man doesn't have anywhere to lay his head. Do those words just work in India, where, I mean, some of the people still live in primitive kind of villages without running water, without electricity, and it's easier for them to leave everything and follow Jesus? After all, some of them, the only possessions they have are the clothes on their backs. Maybe it works in India, but does it work in America today? What do you think? Are those words of Jesus in the Gospels still for us today? Really? 866-34-TRUTH. The Sermon on the Mount, does that still apply to us today? You know, there were some teachers in the past, dispensationalists in their early days. I think very few hold to this today. But in the early days of the pre-trib rapture teaching, dispensationalists, late 1800s, early 1900s, they said that the Sermon on the Mount is not for today. The Sermon on the Mount is basically the kingdom law for the millennial kingdom. That's how we'll live in the millennial kingdom, but it's not for today. And then you have some contemporary teachers, and these contemporary teachers are saying, well, Jesus' teaching, that was in the transitional age, kind of going from the old covenant to the new covenant. And in fact, they don't really apply to us today. I say they do. What do you think? 866-34-TRUTH. What do we do with the radical words of Jesus coming away live from India? We come back. I'm going to tell you a hair-raising, God-glorifying story from India.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, if you missed it on my Facebook page, was it last night? I posted, I believe so, ASKDR Brown on Facebook. Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. I posted a picture of my studio here in my hotel room, wires everywhere, my computer, laptop computer on the right, the mic in the middle, and then the portable unit, which is the brains of this whole system here, over to the left. And you see it's a whole lot. Basically, I put the palm of my hand over it. That's how small it is. 866-34-TRUTH. One reason I've come to India every year, aside from the God-ordained relationship that I have with my friend Yesu Padam, who's truly an apostolic man in the world today. But one other reason I come every year is because of the dedication of the believers, is because of the sacrificial heart of the believers. Whenever I come, they do a water baptism. So we did one this afternoon. And it's just a customary thing. It's become a habit for 19 trips that when we're here, we do water baptism. These are not necessarily people that came to the Lord while I was ministering, but people that want to be baptized. And when I come, they do it. It's kind of a special day and marks it in a special way. And to me, it's an amazing privilege to partake of this. We baptized today about 22 people. And there were two young men, maybe 13, 14 years old. And when they were getting baptized, Yesu Padam said to me, they're the only believers in their family. Their entire family is Hindu. And they're in the school here. They're in the Christian school, I believe, but they're believers now. Who knows the opposition and difficulty and challenge they're going to face? But every single one of these people that Yesu Padam baptized, he asked them, are you willing to follow Jesus by life or by death? Are you willing to follow Jesus by life or by death? This is to get baptized. I've heard him ask people, it's in Telugu, but sometimes they speak English, and I've heard him ask him, are you willing to follow Jesus to your last drop of blood, to your last breath? You say, these are people getting baptized. Yes, but it's understood that there's a commitment required to be a follower of Jesus, not to earn your salvation, but he requires complete obedience. He requires a heart given over to him. That's why I wrote in the year 1990 the book, How Saved Are We? It was not a book written to ask, are you saved? But it was written to believers to say, how saved are we? What does it really mean to follow Jesus? What does it really mean to be his disciples? I mean, we have a message today in the church. Just, hey, it'll only take a minute. Just quick, say this quick little prayer. I got to go. I'm in a hurry. I got to get to that party. Yeah, no, don't worry about it. Just real quick, just pray this prayer and you can go to the party. I mean, that may be a slight exaggeration, but that's about the way it is. Silent outline, pray this prayer. Okay, you're in. Get rid of the guilt, get eternal life. It's great. Yeah, good benefits package, everything. There you go. As opposed to Jesus saying, make every effort to enter in through the narrow gate. Make every effort. Strive to please God. Throughout the New Testament, we're called to make effort, to run our race, to persevere, to take up the cross, to follow Jesus, not to earn our salvation, but to be true disciples. What do we do with all of these verses in the New Testament where Jesus gives radical calls? What do you think? Do you think we just ignore them for the most part? Do you think for the most part it's just like in one ear, out the other? Like, I don't know how many thousands of flights I've been on, and I know the routine. I know, you know, shut your cell phone and anything with an on and off switch. It's too long for them to give the whole list. You know, turn it off before you fly, and you know, the seat backs up and seat buckles on and seatbelts on and the whole bit buckled up. Okay, I know the routine. And then they go through this announcement, and I've heard it hundreds, thousands of times, especially on overseas flights. In the unlikely event of a water landing, the seat beneath, so the cushion beneath your seat will become a flotation device. That's all I remember of it. You say, why? You got a good memory. You've heard it thousands of times. Yeah, because I tune it out because it seems completely irrelevant to me, to be honest. I'm thinking the unlikely event of a water landing, all I need to do is be ready to meet the Lord. That plane goes down overseas. I don't have to worry about the seat cushion. I just have to be ready to meet the Lord and see if there's anyone I can share the gospel with. So, and plus, with all these flights, it's never been relevant. Every flight, it's relevant to have my seat up straight. Every flight, it's relevant. Seatbelts fastened. Every flight, it's relevant. Turn off your cell phone. Every flight. But it's never been relevant for others. So it's in one ear and out the other. Do you think we do the same thing when it comes to the sayings of Jesus? In one ear and out the other. Unless you hate your father, mother, brother, sister, your own life, you can't be my disciple. Meaning, utterly renounce the claim, the hold, the pull of every other thing on your life that would stop you from following Jesus with a whole heart. You can't be my disciple. Matthew 14:25. That section, 14:25 to 14:33, when the great crowds are following him, does he give a pep talk? No, he sifts them. Why? To see who the real disciples are, to see who the real followers are. In John, the 6th chapter, some radically extreme teaching there. Eat my flesh, drink my blood. My flesh is meat indeed, my blood is drink indeed. Why teaching like that is to sift out who was really his and who was just following him for earthly physical reasons and who wanted to follow him because he was the Lord. 866-34-TRUTH. How much in your church do you hear preaching and teaching about the words of Jesus? Oh, maybe this one from Luke 6. Give, and it shall be given you. Maybe we hear that before offerings. Hey, amen. Fine. It's good word. It's true. Give and it'll be given to you. Absolutely. I believe that. Ask, and you shall receive. Seek and you shall find. Knock and the door shall be opened. Maybe we quote those words of Jesus, but how much do we hear the other words of Jesus? How much do we hear the challenging words of Jesus? And all of these are challenging because they call us to step out and obey. But do we just ignore them? Are they no longer relevant? Maybe we just kind of feast on the promises and get some theological truth from Paul and skip over the difficult parts that tell us to live differently? Is it possible that we are watering down the message to make it fit our contemporary lifestyles? Could that be? Or simply ignoring it or reinterpreting it so it has no more meaning? Or saying, well, it applied then, but it doesn't apply now? Friends, folks had jobs then. Folks had families then. Folks had responsibilities then. It's not like just Jesus said, follow me, and the disciples said, you got it. And 3 years later, their wives, hey, honey, have you been away for a while? Yeah, I kind of realize I haven't seen you for like 3 years. Oh, yeah, I've been following Jesus. Oh, okay. Well, is he a good guy? No, these were regular families with regular jobs and regular commitments and regular schedules and regular needs. And yet, they left everything to follow Jesus. Now, please understand, it doesn't mean necessarily that they sold all their possessions. Some did. And sometimes he called for that. It doesn't mean they all did that. For example, Luke 5, it tells us that Matthew left everything, got up, left everything, followed Jesus, then later that day had a feast at his house. So he left what he was doing, said, Jesus, Yeshua, you first. And then after that, he came back to his house and they had a feast, a celebration. And of course, Jesus was criticized for hanging out with the sinners. But when he hung out with them, he changed them. Transformational inclusion. That's what I call that. He was inclusive, and his inclusivity changed people. But what do you think? What do we do with the words of Jesus? I mean, tell me honestly. Don't talk about them, ignore them, reinterpret them, put them off for another time frame or age. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, towards the end of the broadcast yesterday, I was telling the story of what happened to me in 1995 in Tunis in India. And I was not doing this intentionally with radio dramatics. I honestly ran out of time, and I was unable to finish. And I promised I would finish this hour, so I'm going to do that. Now, many years ago, when I lived in Maryland, in New York, I started listening to Sid Roth, who's been a dear friend now for many, many years. I started listening to Sid Roth's radio show, The Messianic Vision, which was 15 minutes a day, 5 days a week. And he was a master interviewer. And he'd be interviewing someone, and maybe it was a Wednesday or a Thursday, so it wasn't the last day of the week. And I'm listening to the show, and I'm spellbound by this interview. And he'd say something like, all right, now tell us, what happened? You were hanging from the plane. You were 1,000 feet in the air. You had been knocked out of the plane. You were hanging on by your fingernails, and you were 1,000 feet over the earth, and you realized you have no more strength, and you cried out to God. What happened next? And they said, Sid, it was a miracle. He goes, oh, we're out of time. Come back tomorrow, and we'll finish. And I remember listening. I can't come back tomorrow. I'm going to be teaching it this time. I want to hear the end of the story, but I'm not going to be here. And then when I started to do interviews with Sid, it was really kind of funny because with like a minute left each day, he would ask me a really profound, important question. Dr. Michael Brown, tell us, what is the key? There are people there who are sick. They're struggling. They need healing. They need a miracle. Dr. Michael Brown, what do they need to do? And I say, Sid, here's the key. Oh, we're out of time. Come back tomorrow. So honestly, I didn't intentionally do that yesterday. So we come back. I'm going to finish the story. In fact, if you didn't catch any of it, I'll give you the recap. What happened in Tuni, one of the more wild ministry stories of my life. And it took place right here in India, where we're coming your way live.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. I'm looking at a lot of comments on Facebook from folks commenting. I posted, please pray. It's 25 minutes before the show is going to start. Please pray my equipment is not responding properly. We have only 25 minutes before we broadcast live from India. One of my old Jewish friends grew up with on Long Island, and we've renewed contact through Facebook. He wrote this 5 minutes ago. Uh-oh, all that talk about your portable studio, you put a Kanahara on it. You kind of cursed it in a Jewish expression there. So typical Jewish humor and friendship there. 866-34-TRUTH. My question, what do you do with the radical sayings of Jesus? What do you do with his radical calls to discipleship? Remember, in the book of Acts, the way that believers were described is disciples. Disciples. So it's not like they came up with a new term and got rid of the old one. Sometimes I think it's a healthy practice to read the words of Jesus and look in the mirror and say, am I a disciple? Mike Brown, looking in the mirror right now. In the hotel room, I mentioned it last night. I'm looking in the mirror. Most of the time I look at my computer screen, but look at the mirror now. Mike Brown, are you a disciple? Seriously? Mm-hmm. See, it's not a matter of questioning your salvation as much as how are you living? How are you living? 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, let me tell you the story of Tuni. 1995, in the midst of a 30-day trip in India, traveling with a friend, Brian, who was a former student of mine for Long Island, and a Japanese-American pastor, David, who was helping with Yesu Panim's new ministry in the States. 30 days and sometimes, you know, 10, 12-hour long, hot, grueling rides in not the best vehicles, and most time no AC. Sometimes, you know, 10, 12 hours of travel, you go barely 100 miles. I mean, rough roads and minister all day and night and sometimes travel through the night. It was a pretty, pretty challenging, difficult trip and a richly blessed one. And in the midst of it, some communication problems with Yesu Padam and I. And we just didn't seem to connect the way we had as fully the first two trips together. And I would feel that he wasn't really with me as he was translating, and he would feel I wasn't really bringing an anointed message. It happened a couple of trips. So, you know, one city, he said, hey, let's have no day meetings, just stay in the room and pray all day, which is nice when you choose to, but it's a little different when you're just kind of left alone in India in a room, just pray. Well, we get to the city of Tuni. It was a significant city for Yesu Padam because when he was a younger man, had been saved for a number of years, was working a secular job, he preached in a Hindu village there. The Hindu elders told him, if you preach here, we will stone you. That's what they said. If you preach here, we will stone you. He did, and they did. He preached. They stoned him. He fell to the ground, bleeding from his hand, bleeding from his head. And he felt this tremendous sense of privilege. And he said, Jesus, you gave your blood for this village. I give my blood for this village. I claim them for you. And about 75% of the village got saved, and the Hindu elders who stoned him became elders in his church. Now, after many years, he was coming back for the first time that there was going to be a major gospel campaign in the city. And the first night, about 1,000 people came, which for this region was actually a good crowd, and the city tended to be very divided among the Christians. It was a good crowd. But after the worship time, just clouds came just out of the blue, suddenly filled the sky. Torrents of rain come pouring down. And meeting's canceled. That's it. Gone. People scattering. I mean, many of them, the clothes they wear on their back, the only clothes they have. Scattering to get out of the rain, grabbing rides on ox carts in the backs of trucks to get out of there. You got to be kidding me. What happened? We were stunned. So I stood on the platform. I had to have faith. And I said, this is a sign that the Spirit's going to be poured out. I wasn't sure, but I felt that way. Next day, too wet to have meetings. Too wet to have meetings. We go to have the meeting that night. Bigger crowd. And we're sitting on the platform. It's real rickety. These things would be built in the hours before we showed up. They'd work through the night, and they were really rickety. And as we're sitting there, boom, boom, suddenly the guys on the platform with me, the platform starts to collapse. Starts to collapse. And they're like a foot, 2 feet lower than me. They had these drinks in their hands, splattered on their clothes. All right, I got to stand on there and preach all night. Time for the message. And what's going to happen next? I'm about 5 minutes into the message. I'm just not connecting. I don't feel harmony with the Yesupan. I'm not in the flow. And I'm talking about the kingdom of God and the power of God. For some reason, I say these words, and God said, let there be light. And suddenly, boom, the lights go out. No sooner do I say it, it's translated, boom, the lights go out. That's the sequence. I say it, and boom, the lights go out. And the enemy's right there breathing down my neck. Oh, you serve a very powerful God. Oh, your God is very powerful. Little Hindu demons in the city more powerful than your God. Yesupan leans over to me and he says, when the lights come on, end the message and give it to me for the altar call. So I preach about 5 more minutes when the lights come back on. Thankfully, the people are still there. Sit down, give it to him. I figure maybe he thinks the lights are going to go back out or he's worried the people are going to leave again. But he doesn't give an altar call. He preaches 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, half hour, 45 minutes. And I'm getting hot. I'm upset. I'm in the flesh. Why does he bring me over to India? He's a powerful preacher. What does he need me here for? Was he just bringing a white face to draw the crowd? Is that it? Is that it? I was in the flesh. If he doesn't like my preaching, let him tell me. It turns out we had a miscommunication. He had said to me, when the lights come on, when you end the message, give it to me for the altar call. I misunderstood him. So when we realized what was happening that night, we said, okay, this is the devil. We're just going to fast until the breakthrough comes. And we're there in this village. And in these villages, there is no running water in this house. And there is these gullies. That's where the sewage is. They run through the village. And it's really bad. I mean, feces and urine. It's bad. And these giant pigs, they jump in there. And they eat this junk. And they come out. And they're glistening like someone poured oil over it. It's grotesque. You look at that and think, oh, I wouldn't want my worst enemy to fall in there. Well, that night, Pastor David, going back to the hotel, fell in there, fell on his side, missed a step, and fell in the sewage gully. And then, remember, there's no running water at the house. They had to get to a well in the back and pour water over him. Oh, poor guy. What next? When we went to the field, we had some demon-chasing prayer. A few of us, Pastor David, went back to the hotel to wash off. And the next day, faith rose, and I preached from Numbers 13:14. The 10 spies said, you can't take the land. We said, we can take the land. And I tell you, the breakthrough came that day. The breakthrough came that night by the final night. Man, it was glorious in Tunney. But what an adventure. Wow, there's more to tell, but that's the short version of it. I may put it in writing one of these days because we've got a lot of wild and amazing stories. All right, friend, talk about something wild and amazing. This week, to do something special from India, you can get $40 of my best teaching on spiritual warfare and angels, demons, and deliverance. 2 CDs, 24 hours of teaching for your computer MP3 player. Normally $40 plus postage. This week only, $15 postage paid to do something special from India. But call today to take advantage of that. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978, or go to our website, askdrbrown.org. Click on the online bookstore. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. Keep praying for me here in India.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the line of fire as I come your way live from Vishakhapatnam, India. If you're just tuning in, everything sounds great. Thankfully, sounds like we're in our normal studio, but we were scrambling. Our portable radio unit was not working. Somehow we just could not connect. And with 3 minutes to go before the show started, thankfully we made our official connection. 866-348-7884. I put a question forward. I didn't get to the phones yet, but I hope to soon. What do we do with the teachings of Jesus about being disciples? What do we do with his call to leave everything and follow him? Excuse me. What do we do with his calling to ruthlessly cut off that which offends and causes us to sin in our own lives? What do we do with teachings that plainly make us uncomfortable? How about Luke 14? If you hold the feast, don't hold it for your friends. They might repay you. If you have a feast, bring in the lame and the blind, the crippled, because they can't repay you. You'll be repaid in the world to come. What do we do with teachings like that? Do we just ignore them? Do we read them as if they're part of, quote, the Old Testament and somehow not applicable? Or do we just put them out of sight, out of mind? Or do we live with a sense of guilt all the time? What do you think? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. You know, I spoke today two messages to pastors and leaders. And if not for the scramble to get our equipment working properly today from India, I was hoping to play a couple of audio clips, but I'll try to get them to our team tomorrow. So you can just hear some of the worship, how it sounds to preach and have translation into Telugu and into Hindi. So you've got three languages going on. Just a few things, little glimpses from the meetings. But I was here in India for two reasons. Number one, from my dear friend Yesupadam's birthday. It's really extraordinary to see how deeply God connected us. It's extraordinary to see how an untouchable from a nowhere village growing up in a little hut in India, raised up to be a prominent Indian leader and an international Christian leader, how God connected our paths and how he weaved us together, and how through some challenges, especially in some of those early trips, a month at a time, and challenging circumstances, and traveling all night. I remember one trip, the fog was so thick that the roads were horrific anyway. I mean, if you're going 30, 40 miles an hour, you were flying. And that was about all you could go because you had these massive potholes in the roads, and the roads were basically just one lane, and you had to negotiate in order to just not pass, but just to deal with oncoming traffic. Somebody had to move over. And we'd have these long rides, and it almost seemed death-defying all the time. And one particular night, we had an all-night bus ride, and the fog was so thick. I mean, we could not see. Nancy and I were sitting close towards the front of this bus that we had rented. We had a Hindu driver named Krishna, but he liked the Christian music. He liked the gospel music. And I don't know how we could even see. Finally, we just stopped and sat on the side of the road. I mean, hot and muggy, and these long trips, and the flesh could come out. And sometimes our relationships got tested. And sometimes Yesupadam and I had to speak candidly one to another. And I mentioned last half hour on one trip I got in the flesh. But it's amazing to see how our lives were intertwined and how at deep and critical, challenging times we've called each other for counsel and for wisdom. And I spoke two messages today to pastors and leaders, to many of the church planters and ministry leaders with Love and Care Ministries here in Vishakhapatnam and other parts of India. And the first message was on relationships, the importance of relationships. I flew all the way over from India to be here for a 60th birthday party with guests coming from around the country. Relationships, the fabric of life. Relationships, the foundation of life. Jesus longing to eat the Last Supper with his disciples because they were his friends. We'll be back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire. By the way, tomorrow's broadcast, going to get into some controversial issues that will be very, very important. So please be sure to join us live from India tomorrow. We've got broadcasting through the week from India. 866-34-TRUTH. My question, I'm going to go to the phones momentarily. What do we do with the teachings of Jesus that are radical, that call us to leave everything and follow him? You say, well, he just says we have to be willing. Well, if you're willing, then if he says do it, that's fine, right? We just have to be willing to leave everything. Well, if he says leave everything, then you say, yes, Lord. As opposed to, what? What? I just said the word. I didn't mean the word. I said the words. I didn't mean the words. No, willing means willing. 866-348-7884. A couple of years ago, one of the most heart-wrenching meetings I was ever in my life was a meeting where we washed the feet of men that were going back, or for the first time going to Orissa, a state that experienced tremendous persecution, displacing about 50,000 Christians. Footage I actually saw of some of these Christians being beaten by crowds, and right in front of your eyes, the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. I mean, just beating the guys, beating with a stick on their heads and backs, and you know, the guy can't walk and is suddenly crippled by the blows to the spine and clubbed over and over to the head and just killed. And police standing by doing nothing and then throwing the bodies of the injured in the back of trucks. I mean, it was horrific to see. And we washed the feet of pastors and leaders that were going back there and others that were going to plant churches there. And one brother I saw again today, he got up and sang a song of devotion to Jesus, a song of taking up the cross. And in fact, he had been beaten almost to death. He was in a coma for 6 days and then found out that in the hospital, his family found out that the Hindu radicals got to a radical Hindu doctor in the hospital who was going to kill him. So they were able to smuggle him out of the hospital, get him out of the hospital where he survived. And the people that were involved trying to kill him, many of them ended up getting saved. And he baptized them. He was going back to that area. And he's gone back and continues to live and minister there, even though he knows he could be killed. And then I washed the feet of a woman whose husband we had sent out to preach, graduated from Yesu Pottom's ministry school here. They've had a couple thousand grads and planted something like 1,300 churches. And we laid hands on him and sent him out. He was killed by Hindus, radical Hindus. His body was burned, and the Hindus told his family, you report this to police, we'll kill you, his wife and children. She was there. Washing her feet was quite overwhelming, like nothing I'd ever done, because I felt in a certain level complicit for her husband's death, because he responded to my messages as well, and we laid hands on him and sent him out. And another woman whose husband had been killed by the Naxalites, by the radical communists, this was December of 2010. It was September that he had been killed, so just a few months earlier. They chopped his head off with an axe in front of her. The 17-year-old daughter got up to testify, and they translated for me her words. And she had some tears, or at least you could say she was a little choked up, but otherwise totally composed. And she said, I don't want your sympathy, and I don't want your money. Now, all my life I've lived with this, wanting to have a sense of purpose, and now that my father was killed doing God's work, for the first time I have a sense of purpose. Wow. And I want to continue my education and get into medical work so I can serve the people in my village here, some of whom killed her father. Seems real enough to be a disciple there. Seems real enough to live these things out. What do we do in America? How do we live this thing out in the midst of the materialism and greed and carnality and abundance of our culture? And on the one hand, the acceptance of Christianity, at least in a form. How do we live this thing out? What do we do with the words of Jesus? 866-34-TRUTH. I've got more to share with you, stories from India, but let me go to the phones first, starting with Mike in Jersey City. Thanks, Mike, for calling the Line of Fire.
Yeah, it's nice to speak with you, Dr. Brown.
Thank you, sir.
I just want to say that my take on it is, you know, as Jesus is the eternal Son of God, and his word's got to be eternally true. And those things that apply then apply now. But we live in a culture which is radically different. And I don't think that his sayings were necessarily a bunch of steps we're supposed to go through or rules that we're supposed to specifically try to keep, but that they're more of a description of what happens to us when we're empowered by the Spirit and following the leading of the Spirit, because it's the Lord that leads us into situations. He's sovereignly in control. So at least that's my take. And we don't face severe persecution on a regular basis, but that could change. I mean, that could change in a moment.
Mike, let me ask you this. If it was more costly to follow Jesus, if here in America there was a real price to pay, again, I'm not talking about earning our salvation, but I mean there's persecution, there's opposition, maybe family rejects us, maybe potential loss of job, maybe physical attack or persecution. Do you think that would affect the quality of our, quote, Christianity here in America?
Well, absolutely. I mean, from my own personal experience, I know that I've been saved for about 16 years, and there's people, friends of mine, that haven't spoken to me in 16 years. There's family members that have kind of not really treated me harshly, but just avoid me and that sort of thing. And this is minor. This is a little thing. It's not exactly persecution. But the Lord pretty much gave us this word saying that if you're faithful to follow, then you're going to experience persecution. You're going to experience these things.
Yeah, he did. He did say that. Yep. Hey, Mike, I do agree with you in what you're saying. Thank you, sir, for the call. 866-34-TRUTH. Well, let me ask you this follow-up question, and I don't want to read something to you, but let me ask you this follow-up question. Do you think if it was more costly to follow Jesus here in America, if to become a genuine follower of Jesus meant you might lose your job, if you were caught being baptized, that you might be thrown in jail, that to read your Bible might be considered a crime, do you think that would affect the way we live here in America? Do you think that what we might need is some persecution? It may sound like a strange question. I certainly, as a human being, would rather sleep in a bed than on a prison floor. I would rather not find out what it feels like to be tortured with electric shocks. I'd rather have a choice of what I eat than be given a starvation diet in prison. So I'm not looking for persecution in that sense. I don't have some kind of martyr complex. But what if it was more costly to follow Jesus? Have you thought about that? Could it be that either the superficial nature of our message or the fact that we have a culture that kind of smiles on things and just, on the one hand, there's a little resistance, but for the most part, hey, you can have your church, you can have your mega church, you can have your radio ministry, your TV ministry, you can do all that. You can have Christian diet books, you can have Christian real estate books, you can have Christian self-help books and whatever, you know, whatever. Hey, why not? You think? My friend David Rabinell asked this question in terms of finding out what the church is really like, and he's not looking for this or hoping for this. But he said, you know, all you need is on a Sunday morning or two for some terrorists to plant bombs in buildings. Sunday morning, buildings blow up, and you get some word from these radical terrorists, we're targeting churches all over America. And suddenly you find out how many people stay home, but more importantly, how many, not just stay home, there are times to not walk into danger, but how many, you find out that the main substance of their spiritual life was going to a church service. Find out, a little testing, a little persecution, how deep we really are. Isn't that what Jesus said in the parable of the sower? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go right back to the phones. Marion in Boston, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. How are you today?
Good. Nice to hear your voice again.
Listen, I'm glad you swept the question, because I personally believe that if things were any greater on the church today, there'd probably be less of a church in America. Only because people are not really standing on the word as Christ gave it. If it doesn't have to do with prosperity and us becoming mega this and mega that, we'd be lost. And so I think if we suffered like they did in India, there'd be very few of us here in the States that would be claiming to be Christian.
Yeah, the question would be, what quality would the people be? And of course, there are parts of India where it's peaceful, and being a Christian doesn't bring physical persecution, but almost always there's a family cost. If you come from a Hindu family or a Muslim family, which is a much smaller minority. And I remember, Marion, on one of our early trips, I was doing a leaders meeting, but Nancy was out with a team, and they were going to a village to evangelize. And they were waiting on the bus, the small bus that we had rented for the team. And it was in between stops. And this woman came out and wanted to talk to our team. And she was the only believer in her village. And she just was so thrilled to meet other believers. And she said her husband beats her all the time for the faith, but it's worth it. She loves Jesus. She loves Jesus and was thrilled to meet other believers. Friends, we can learn from these folks here in India.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us here on The Line of Fire. We're talking about the sayings of Jesus. I'm here in India. It's only appropriate to do that. I'm talking about the sayings of Jesus, the radical call to discipleship, the question of how we'd be living in America if there was persecution and opposition. 866-34-TRUTH. I'll get to the call shortly. If I don't get to all of you this hour and the remaining time, please stay on the line because I'm going to continue this conversation and take a little bit different direction in the next hour. All right. let me read something to you. It's chapter one of my book, How Saved Are We? Are you ready? Written in 1990. The American church at the end of the 20th century is experiencing a crisis. For years, we've preached a cheap gospel and peddled a soft savior. We have taught salvation without self-denial and the crown without the cross. We have catered to the unsaved and compromised with the world. Now we are paying the price. Our, quote, instant salvation message has dishonored God and deluded men. Our faulty seeds have produced a flaky harvest. What a pitiful crop we are reaping. Now, let me make it plain. I believe God saves instantly. But it's the way we package it, you know, instant this, instant that, instant salvation, as opposed to a radical change of life and a whole life spent serving the Lord. That's where we're in error. Here's what I wrote in How Saved Are We? As American believers, we spend hours watching television but minutes watching in prayer, are hungry for the sports page but have little taste for the word, spend more money on pet food than on foreign missions, love to feast but hate to fast, welcome God's blessings, but are wary of his burdens. Is this what Jesus died for? Is this our new life in him? Stop for a moment and think. Anyone who spends more time playing video games and seeking God in prayer has no right to call Jesus Lord. So wait a minute, Mike Brown, how dare you throw that legalistic trip? Just think about it. Is the Lord Jesus directing us to do that? That's the question. Is the Lord Jesus directing us? When I say Lord, am I rightly calling him Lord? That was my point there. Anyone who takes delight in today's perverted soap operas is serving another God. That was 1990. Anyone who cannot die to sports for a season is worshiping idols. 1 John 2, James 4, if anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him, because friendship with the world is hatred toward God. In reality, whose friends are we? It's time for some serious soul searching, I wrote in How Saved Are We. What kind of born-again experience have we had? If it calls for almost no personal sacrifice, produces virtually no separation from the world, and breeds practically no hatred of sin, how can we claim to be born from above? Where is the evidence of our new nature? Now, Yesupalam, here in India, read How Saved Are We? Some friends he had met in America. So he was just venturing into the States for the first time, which is a whole new world for him. I remember when I brought him into New York City with me, I was going to be speaking at Times Square Church, and I brought him in, and he was able to preach and address the crowd. And I remember him telling Pastor Don Wilkerson what an extraordinary honor it was for him to be there. And Pastor Don said, no, the honor is ours. He recognized the quality of this man's life serving so sacrificially in India. And Yesupalam read, but I just remember going into New York the first time. He was just absolutely stunned by the buildings, completely stunned, especially when you realize the background coming from this little hut, a little village in India. But he read How Saved Are We? Whatever Happened to the Power of God, which was written in 1991. His heart was stirred. He wanted to meet this American who wrote these words, and he was afraid to ask me to come to India. And I said, brother, how about if I came, did some day teachings for leaders and preached at night? He said, brother, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to invite you to come. And that began a relationship now, which is 20 years old and one of the closest I have in the world. And they translated Whatever Happened to the Power of God and How Saved Are We into Telugu. And we arrived in 1993 for our first trip. And as we drove into their little village, there were people, these girls that were students in the ministry school, I believe, they were sitting on the ground and they were sewing. What were they sewing? They were sewing the binding of the book. That's how they put the book out. They literally worked around the clock for 3 weeks to get the book ready for when I came to have it in Telugu. One of the Christian leaders in the city had translated it. I still have his letter for the foreword that he wrote when it was translated into Telugu. And they didn't have a printing press that set things digitally then. So the way it worked was the old style. You've got this big plate, and you put in every letter for a page. You have to proof it, put it in, and then you print however many pages it is. And then when you're done with that, you have to take all the letters out and set the new page. And if you ever do a reprint, you have to read. I mean, tedious. But you see, they resonated with this message. It's so hard sometimes for us to resonate with it here in America. Look, friends, I want to make an honest appeal to you, not only to take the words of Jesus seriously, not to get under condemnation and guilt, but to recognize in the midst of the prosperity and abundance and ease of America that we really can be disciples. That if it's possible to live for Jesus in India in the 21st century, and it's possible to live for Jesus in China, or in Iran, or in some other country where there's persecution, opposition, it's possible to live for Jesus in America. But we've got to make a concerted effort to do it. Let his words challenge you. And then just say, okay, Lord, what do you want me to do? Here I am. I'm your son. I'm your daughter. I'm your servant. Live it out on a day-to-day basis. And I want to make a forthright appeal. Excuse me. We need you to respond financially and help us with this broadcast. God knows that we're stretched out and going for it. I'm not here. We come to India not to get, but to give. Of course, I'm enriched by the people here. But we're not here in India to gain finances. It's quite the reverse. We travel and pour ourselves out as a privilege for the gospel. And meeting one of our grads, she's been here now 11 years, and she speaks English with an Indian accent. It's so cute to hear her. But she and her husband just going for it. And we support them every month. Where their main actually living support on a monthly basis. I want to ask you forthrightly to help me. Honestly, I haven't any clue in the natural how we can pay our radio bills. No clue. God's supplied, but we need some real breakthroughs. And the biggest thing we need is monthly supporters. And many of you could do it. It's not hard. Many could do it. I know some can't, but please pray. If you can't, would you pray? Or if the Lord's not directing you to, would you at least pray? For every new torchbearer, these are folks who support us with at least $25 or more per month. Not only will we send you a free new message every month that'll stir your heart and give you 15% discount in our online bookstore and free access to our online classes, but this week only, we're asking God for 100 torchbearers. Maybe we got 4 or 5 people responded so far, so we're waiting for you to respond, all right? We're asking God for 100 new torchbearers this month, and we'll send you my gift, my thank you gift, 3 full debates, 6 hours of material on 4 DVDs, 3 of the best debates I've ever done, one with Rabbi Shmuley, one where I team up with Dr. James White to debate 2 opponents, one with a gay activist who claims to be a born-again Christian. We'll send you those as a thank you gift. So that's almost like the first 3 months paid that we're sending it back to you. So would you join with us? Call right now, 1-800-278-9978. Come on, step up and stand with us. 1-800-278-9978, or go online, askdrbrown.org. Right on the homepage, just click on Become a Monthly Supporter. Right on the homepage, askdrbrown.org. 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line, the radical words of Jesus were radical in his day. They're radical for us today. But if we call him Lord, we must grapple with them, wrestle with them, and say, Lord, I'm your son, I'm your daughter, I'm your servant. Here I am, send me.
Well, Jesus had some really radical things to say about following him, about being disciples. Do those words still apply to us today?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, I am triply blessed to be coming your way live right now from Visakhapatnam, India. Can I tell you why I'm triply blessed? Number one, I'm always blessed to be doing radio. It's my joy. It's my privilege. It's the highlight of every day in ministry. And I'm so thrilled that I have this open door from the Lord and this incredible privilege of speaking to you 5 days a week and across America 2 hours a day. Number two, I'm blessed because it's live from India. And this is always special when we can do things live from another country. I asked on Facebook today if it means anything to folks when I do shows live from different locations. I got some neat responses in terms of the value, in terms of how it enhances things and brings a certain reality and even kind of takes people on the front lines with me. But there's a third reason I am triply blessed, and that's that we could not get our equipment working properly until 3 minutes, count them, 3 minutes before the show. Now, I've got to say that Joey and Andrew were calm, and we were scrambling, rebooting. And finally, thankfully, folks prayed, and we tried some different suggestions, and we connected. So I'm really thrilled to be coming your way. We had a backup plan, but it would not have been high quality. So my joy, 866-34-TRUTH. All right, I asked a question in the last hour. I'm going to tell you some India stories today as well. But I asked a question in the last hour, which was this. Jesus said a lot of radical things. What do we do with them? Do we just ignore them? Do we simply say, well, that was for then? Do we kind of make them into churchianity so they don't cost us anything? Do we ignore them? What do we do with the radical sayings of Jesus? Leave everything and follow me. Unless you forsake everything, excuse me, you have, you cannot be my disciple. And on and on. What do we do with these radical sayings of Jesus? Well, that led to a second question. And I want to put this out for you. 866-348-7884. And I'm going to go to the calls very quickly in this hour and then share some things with you from my book, How Saved Are We? And update you on what happened today here in India and take you back to some pretty wild stories from the past here in India. Here's my question. What if persecution broke here in America, like happens from time to time in India and happens all the time in some other countries? And for the most part in India, even if there's not a wave of persecution, if you're from a devout Hindu family, to follow Jesus could cost you everything in terms of family abandoning you, careers, washing out, cultural, social rejection. And then in certain cases, there is physical danger as well. What would happen if it became more costly to follow Jesus in America? Look, there are a lot of us that say enjoy watching an NFL game, but there are only a few athletes, even among the best college athletes, who are good enough to make it into the NFL. The level of dedication, the level of commitment, the workout, the training, how they have to push, the physical toll on their bodies, the skill level required, only a few make it. And they understand when they're there, they can't coast or get lazy or they're out. I'm not talking about earning salvation. I'm not talking about how hard we have to work in order to be saved, whatever. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm asking the question, what if persecution broke in America? What if it was costly to follow Jesus to the point that say when you got baptized, your family disowned you and you were fired from your job? Maybe if you were caught leading a Bible study, you were beaten. What would it do to the quality of our faith here? We come back going right to your calls live from India.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. My delight to be with you here in India, Vishakhapatnam. Tomorrow, God willing, broadcasting live from Mumbai. Every broadcast this week will originate from India, God willing. So thanks for joining us. Hey, think about the parable of the sower for a minute. Think about the parable of the sower. The seed that falls on stony ground quickly shoots up. Woo, boo, yeah, excite, wow, Jesus, wonderful. God, love him, Bible, sure, salvation, this is great. Shoots up quickly. But when the sun comes out, what happens? The sun comes out and scorches it. And quickly, gone. Why? Trials and testing because of the word. So trials, persecution for the word's sake expose that this has no deep roots and therefore it doesn't endure. Now, in your theology, that might be someone who was a false convert, gave the impression of being a Christian, but really wasn't. And they were exposed. It's possible, I read it differently, that these were people who were converted but were not deep, and therefore when tested, fell away. What would happen to a lot of American Christianity if testing and trials came for the word? I wonder if a restaurant advertised free meals all day today, and they serve good meals, how packed that place would be. And then if they said, hey, sorry, we can't do that any longer, regular prices now, I wonder how many people would get up and leave. I wonder how many people would stay if they said, hey, this restaurant is going to be coming under attack from terrorists in an hour, but the free food's still here. People get out of there. I wonder what's going to be exposed. The fire, Peter tells us, Paul tells us, tests the quality of the work. Some are future purging, some are present purging. What would happen to the church in America if persecution broke? All right, let me get to the calls. 866-34-TRUTH, starting with our friend Reverend Bruce somewhere on Long Island. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi, brother. I know what you're going through. I've been to Israel. I've been there too, but I've been to India on three occasions to do some revival and crusades. And one home I stayed in, they had just lost their son. This was in the South. They had just lost their son to persecution. He was mowed. He was an evangelist. He was mowed down by some Hindus a week prior to me coming. And the very wow. pastor that has brought me to India, he himself was beaten up and has been beaten up several occasions for the preaching of the gospel there in India. So I know what you're going through. They smuggled me into places where they don't expect women to preach. So
what's your perspective then on us here in America?
Oh, man. Well, first of all, coming from an individual approach, I may not have suffered like those people over in Israel. In India, but I have suffered a hell to pay serving God individually here in America because we still have a devil, okay? We still have those attacks, and I know what it is to go through trials and tribulations for my service from the Lord, and I come from out of a occultic background with a witch that's a mother, so you could just imagine what I've gone through.
Got it. So let me ask you this then. Uh-huh. Does that deepen your resolve to be a follower of Jesus? Has that made you more committed to the Lord and a deeper disciple?
I have been saved for over 33 years, in the ministry for over 30, and I'm still here. But I am afraid. I'm going to tell you what I'm afraid of. Nationally, if the American people had to go through what the people are going through in India and other parts of the world, like in China and these underground churches where they're being killed, murdered, imprisoned, I'm sad to say that many Christians will not pay that price in America.
Yeah, yeah, I absolutely agree with you. Thank you for the call and the comments. No question that persecution would test things in America, and many that are convenience Christians, many who are consumers, not disciples, would fall away. You say, Mike Brown, are you patting yourself on the back? No, I'm speaking realistically, and I'm not boasting about tomorrow for myself or anyone. I am saying that persecution, opposition would expose a lot of shallow roots here in America. Here, consider this. Look, I'm bringing you a perspective here from India. The first hour I mentioned we did a water baptism again today, as we do on every trip. These are not necessarily people who came to faith when I was ministering. In fact, the ministry I do here primarily is not evangelistic, but it's to build up the body and encourage and challenge believers to go deeper. And somehow I have enough track record with them, and they know that in different times preaching here in India, I've put myself in risk of my life as well for the gospel. That they know that, and therefore there's trust and respect. But we do a water baptism every time. I understand it's just a special time for them and kind of seals it all the more. So they ask me to do these, and it's such a special honor to do them. But when Yesupanam baptizes people, and he's got this very tender touch. Here he's been preaching in the ministry for decades. He's 60 years old, but he's got this very gentle touch. We baptized a number of older ladies today, kind of afraid to get down in the baptismal pool. Some young teenage boys, girls, older men. And he just asked them tenderly. I don't understand what's happening in Telugu as it's happening, but he's told me what he asked, if they believe in Jesus and confess him as Lord and so on. And then, are they willing to follow him by life or by death? And he just asked them tenderly, and they said yes, and we pray. And sometimes he looks at me with tears in his eyes. And, you know, you don't know what this person has suffered for the gospel. She's a doctor. Her whole family turned against her. He's the only believer in his family. They're all Hindu. And we see the quality of life here and how it's been tested. And I'm quite sure, I don't have any second thoughts about this statement at all, that there are a lot of shallow ground hearers based on the parable of the sower in Matthew 13, Mark 4, and Luke 8. Those who receive the word and seem to be on fire from the start, but they get exposed quickly when trials and tests arise because of the word, and they quickly fall away because they had no root. I'm convinced that there are a lot of people in America that look like believers. I'm not judging individuals. God knows. I always believe the best and assume the best. But I have no question that there are a lot of believers in America, or apparent believers, and a lot of churches, small and large, that if some persecution came for the word, we'd quickly find out that they were either superficial converts or not converts at all. 866-34-TRUTH. Back to the phones. Kevin in Nyack, New York. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yeah, how you doing, Dr. Brown? Thank you for taking my call. You know, I totally agree with your statement about those people that would fall away, you know, and I have to confess there are some times that I've lost faith. But I also think you would have so many more fervent believers that are deeper into the word,
yes,
to
sir.
Share the word. You know, those that will fall away will be gone. Those that are still there will be stronger. And I've been to places on missions trips like Malaysia and Indonesia and the Philippines, where they hear the word for the first time, the true word for the first time, and it's like they've won the lottery, and they train up people to go to places that have even less than they do.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable the dedication that even despite the fact that they're going to suffer, they still go out and do what we should be doing here in this country, but we don't do nearly quite enough. And it's embarrassing sometimes.
Yeah, Kevin, you're absolutely right on all accounts. And yes, it's God who keeps us, and it's God who's faithful. And when we've had our times of weakness, his grace has helped us and has kept us. But let's be honest and straight here. Persecution, opposition would separate the men from the boys. So to say,
Absolutely. It
would separate those who are in it just for the fishes and the loaves, not because they saw Jesus perform a miracle, but because their stomachs were filled. And hey, following Jesus is pretty good on the belly. Hey, Kevin, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
You know, look, I've never been in the military, let alone been a Navy SEAL, but I've read some of Navy SEALs and their training is legendary. But the whole training is designed to separate the men from the boys. The whole training is designed to see who is serious and who is not, and who can actually make it as a SEAL long term, because they realize their lives are at stake. And one guy fails, the whole mission could fail, a mission of national security, or the others could be killed. So it's essential that only ones who can really endure do it. Now, I'm not saying God puts us through tests like that to make us into Navy SEALs, because you're not thinking, oh, come on, I'm no spiritual Navy SEAL. I understand that. But hear me, please hear me. Separation, sifting, challenging, it brings up who we really are. Hey, Charles in Mumbai, come on, I get to Mumbai tomorrow. Are you leaving already? You're going to leave just as I'm getting there? Can't believe it, buddy. Wow.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us live from India. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. Hey, if I'm in India, I'm going to bring a perspective from India to you. 866-34-TRUTH. Fact, I'm just going to give you a forthright challenge to step up and stand with us financially. Everyone who can. This is no hype. This is, 100% to go to our radio outreach. 100% to go to this voice of moral, cultural, spiritual revolution. 100% to help us broadcast across America and by internet around the world. Our budget, our support continues little by little by little to catch up with our bills, which is the way it works the first few years on a national radio program like this. But it means that for right now, we're under tremendous pressure to meet financial obligations, and we need some miracles. And the most important thing, we need more torchbearers, more monthly supporters. So for minimal sacrifice for many, you can join with us. For some, no sacrifice at all. Some have more. If you can give at least $25 or more per month, some have given $50, $100. There are churches that give several thousand a month and help us do this work and help us reach out to the lost sheep of the house of Israel and help us go to the nations and raise up laborers for the nations. But become a torchbearer. We've asked God for 100 new torchbearers while I'm in India. And, we've just got the first handful that have responded. So if you can, stand with us. We'll send you a new message every month. 15% discount you get in our online bookstore. Free access to our online classes. And this week only, just to encourage you and for us to sow back into you, we are sending three of my very best debates. One on Jesus and Isaiah 53 with Rabbi Shmuley. One where I team up with Dr. James White, and we debate those who deny the deity of Jesus, and one with a gay activist who claims to be born-again Christian. Four DVDs, 6 hours total, retail value of about $60, but my thank you gift if you become a torchbearer this week. So would you do that? Call right now, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Or just go online, ask drbrown.org, and when you do that, just click on Become a Monthly Supporter. 866-34-TRUTH. Back to the phones. We're talking about the radical sayings of Jesus, and we're talking about persecution. If persecution rose here in America, how would it affect the church? How would it affect the quality of our discipleship? And can we live like that without the persecution? John in Houston, Texas, thanks for calling the Line of Fire. All right, well, so much for John in Houston, Texas. How about Daryl in Laurel, Maryland? Thanks for calling the Line of Fire. Yes, you're on the line.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for taking my call. And you were talking about persecution, as in the case of Michael Solomon in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, but he was the one who was arrested. And that just makes me wonder, is something like that just on the very beginnings of starting? But it also reminds me of the book, God's Smuggler, by...
Brother Andrew.
Thank you. Keep me straight. And one of the things...
Hey, that's what we do 5 days a week, man.
There you go. Yeah, and you do a great job.
Thank you.
I'm totally blind, and a friend of mine read that to me, 30 years ago or something like that, in the cafeteria where I worked. And the one scene I remember is handgun carrying men came into a church and evacuated the church, but some people stood by, and after they those who wanted to leave left, they shut the door and said, "Praise the Lord, let's pray."
And yeah, in fact, just to put the meat on the bones of that story, it happened in Romania.
Thank you.
Pastor Richard Wormbraun told me, he knows the pastor and verified it, they came in, these armed soldiers came in the church building, true story, and they said, if you stay here, we will kill you. If you are willing to deny Jesus, you can leave. Think about it. And they gave the people a few minutes, and after a few minutes, a handful of people got up and left. And I always wonder, what were they going through? You know, maybe one of them cared for a blind relative, and they thought, well, I have to go home. What if the husband had just come from the honeymoon, and he was wanted to come to the church service and was going to go back home to be with his wife, and you know, as newlyweds? What if you were caring for your parents, and you were there, and they weren't? You know, but only a few people got up and left. The rest stayed, and then the soldiers locked the doors, put their weapons down, and they said to everyone there, "Praise the Lord, we are Christians too." But we could not risk worshiping with anyone who was not willing to die for Jesus.
Yes.
Yeah, Daryl, it's a remarkable story, a true story. But let me tell you something about Brother Andrew, God's smuggler. I don't know him personally. Many years ago, we had missed each other. He preached at Times Square Church for Pastor David Wilkerson back then in the 1990s.
Okay.
I had preached. He had preached at different times, so I wasn't there when he preached, but I was given a tape of his message. But, Daryl, some of our students, some of our grads working in Holland got to spend some time with him because he's Dutch, you know.
Right.
And Brother Andrew's been an incredibly bold servant of the Lord. During the hostage crisis in Lebanon a few decades back, he offered himself in the place of one of the hostages. "You take me as a hostage, but let that one go free." He has preached the gospel on Hamas campuses and reached out to Palestinian terrorists. Absolutely remarkable. Our grads met with him and did an interview with him and asked him, "If you could do anything differently, what would you do differently?" I hope you're sitting down, Daryl. He said,
yeah.
"I wish I had been more radical."
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I
that's
wish
amazing.
I had been more radical. And most of us look at a life like his and think, that's radical.
Yeah.
And he looks at it and wished he had stepped out more. Hey, Daryl, thank you, sir, for the
you're
call.
Welcome.
Yeah, you know, look, friends, this is not a matter of, we're going to be these macho Christian superheroes. Watch what we do. Watch our great exploits as we put on this Holy Ghost show. No, it's not about beating our chests and showing off and being macho. In fact, some of the most amazing servants of the Lord I know are very little people, very quiet people. You wouldn't even notice them in the room, but they outshine us, and they are radically committed to Jesus. And maybe widows who pray and fast and seek the face of God with broken hearts, and God's near to the brokenhearted. But I have no question, friends. When we come back, I'm going to read an excerpt from How Saved Are We, then tell you some India stories. I have no question that if persecution broke out here in America for the gospel, it would separate the wheat from the chaff. It would separate, so to say, the men from the boys. It would separate the truly committed from the casually committed or conveniently committed. What happens when it's not convenient to follow Jesus? Who are really following? Then we'll find out who the real disciples are. Won't we? 866-34-TRUTH. Friends, this week, doing something radical from India, $40 worth of teaching, 24 hours, two intense, deep, biblically-based teaching series, one on spiritual warfare, 12 hours long, one on angels, demons, and deliverance, 12 hours long. I mean, biblically based, life-changing. They're only $20 each plus postage on a CD for your computer MP3 player. This week, get both, postage paid, just $15. Seriously. But you got to call now, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Back with much more.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, I am coming your way live from India again, but not without some drama. Oh, yeah, some drama today. Our wonderful portable radio unit was just not responding. And with 3 minutes left before the broadcast, it looked like we were going to have to go with a backup system where I used my computer to call in by Skype, which would have sounded like I was on a phone call from India. Not what we wanted to do. And thankfully, 3 minutes to go, it worked successfully. You know how many times we just about had to enter this data in this web browser information to get me to go through in this hotel, and it would get there and freeze. I'd get my name entered and the room number entered and then press the OK button, and it would freeze. I can't tell you how many times, and then 3 minutes to go, boom, there we were. I put up these urgent Facebook requests for prayer. So thanks to everyone who prayed and stood with me. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. We've been talking about the radical sayings of Jesus, talking about what would happen if persecution broke here in America, and then asking the big question, can we live like real serious disciples here in America, as so many of the believers do in India? Oh, they're far from perfect. And you've got plenty of parts in India where the church is superficial, but those going for it, they're going for it. I mean, by life or by death is their way of life. And sharing Jesus at any cost or consequence is their way of life. And when we do water baptisms, it's an awesome thing to see as they all say, by life or by death, they'll follow Jesus, as we did just a few hours ago today. Is it possible to live for Jesus in accordance with the standards of the New Testament without persecution in America? With our current setting in America, although there's more hostility towards the gospel, there's not much of a price to pay for following Jesus, by and large, so far. But that could turn on a dime. Is it possible to really live out the teachings of Jesus without persecution? Or do we need persecution to separate the wheat from the chaff, or the convenience disciples from the committed disciples? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Listen to what I wrote in my book, How Saved Are We, in 1990. It's time for some serious soul searching. What kind of born-again experience have we had if it calls for almost no personal sacrifice, produces virtually no separation from the world, and breeds practically no hatred of sin? How can we claim to be born from above? Where is the evidence of our new nature? We call ourselves citizens of heaven, yet our hearts are caught up in earthly treasures. We sing we're the people of God, but we're entertained by the worst of the devil's children. We claim to be dead to the world, yet we're more interested in temporal fashions than in eternal souls. Something is wrong with our salvation experience. Bad fruits means bad roots. We say, just confess Jesus as Lord and you're in. He says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only he who does the will of my Father in heaven. We say, just pray this prayer and it's done. He says, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. We say, just come to the altar, it'll only take a minute. He says, make every effort to enter through the narrow door, because many, I tell you, will try to enter, will not be able to. Who do you think is right? Jesus made it painfully clear to the large crowds who were traveling with him. If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father, mother, wife, children, brothers, sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Meaning the utter renouncing of every other hold, every other pull that stands between us and being disciples. Anyone who does not carry his cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. And of you who does not give up everything he has cannot be my disciple. Who do you think we're fooling? It's time to count the cost. Maybe we have truly come to Jesus, but can we say we're following him? Maybe we have believed the good news, but are we daily carrying our cross? Jesus commanded us to go and make disciples of all nations. Maybe we need to become disciples first. Yes, salvation is by grace through faith, and we can add nothing to it. But it is the grace of God that teaches us to say no to ungodliness and worldly passions and live self-controlled, upright, godly lives in this present age, Titus 2, and true faith is known by what it does, since faith without deeds is useless, James 2. We come back, some stories straight from India.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire, broadcast live from India. And I really want to give you an India perspective while I'm here. 866-34-TRUTH. I asked a question, put it on Facebook. I just got a handful of responses, but where was it? No, not there. Can't find it there. Not there. Oh, come on, where is it? Wonderful Facebook kind of changes things, so it's not so wonderfully intuitive. Well, I asked a question in terms of is it helpful? Does it enhance the broadcast when I do a live show from another part of the world? One dear brother graciously said that it's meaningful. It's meaningful because it shows my commitment to radio, obviously, from anywhere. I mean, it's my delight to do it. But, yeah, at this point, what time is it now in India? I ministered, you know, a couple long sessions, especially one long afternoon session, water baptisms, then an evening session. But what time is it? I don't even know what time it is here in India. 1:08 in the morning. So obviously it's late and it's been a long day, and then I fly to Mumbai tomorrow and then broadcast God willing live from Mumbai. And so I appreciated their brother's comments, but others said that it does give a perspective from the front lines and it does enhance things. So when I'm here in India, the contrasts are even sharper. This is something I carry and I walk in and I live with, but there's something that's just deeper and more focused and more intense when I'm over here. And I realize the dedication of the brothers and sisters and see the price that's paid for the gospel. On my second trip to India in 1994, I shared some stories from 2010. I shared some stories from 1995, last hour and a half on the air. But 1994 was our second trip. And Yesupanam was in Maryland. When we lived in Maryland, we were praying together about different cities. And he said, brother, there's a city called Vijayawada. And the goddess they worship there is called Kanaka Durga. And she is considered to be the most powerful deity in Andhra Pradesh, the state of Andhra, with, I don't know, maybe at that time 60 million people, something like that. That's the state I'm in now. And he said, it's a real spiritual stronghold. I feel we're supposed to go and preach in Vijayawada. And as we prayed, I really felt there was supposed to be a prophetic confrontation. Now, look, I'm not silly about this. I'm not just going to blow in and blow out. I know once you leave, the local church is still there, and they have to deal with what you've done for good or for bad. And I'm not going to just mess with spiritual powers. Oh, yeah, you're some demon power. Well, you know, there's real power in darkness, and you just got to use wisdom. But I felt the Lord wanted there to be a prophetic confrontation. And I remember as we started to get closer, I felt this attack. Some call it a Jezebel spirit. You say, what in the world is that? Well, don't call some sister that you don't like in the church Jezebel. All right, please don't. She's got a Jezebel spirit. Just drop that. Just drop that. All right? You know how many people have been accused and burned like that? But Jezebel in the Bible, she's mentioned in the New Testament, probably just as a symbolic name for a false prophetess in Revelation 2. But in the Old Testament, Jezebel is the wife of Ahab, who was a weak leader and a wicked man. And a lot of the wickedness came from his wife, Jezebel. And she even intimidated Elijah the prophet after a great encounter with God. He felt intimidated when she was ready to kill him. Well, I felt this intimidating spirit. I felt this thing that was kind of cutting off my courage and my masculinity in the Lord, you know, my strength to stand. And as I was praying, I just kept thinking about this spirit. I don't mean as a female spirit. I'm just this. It's the way it was coming to me in terms of the nature of the attack. Jezebel was the way that I and some others described it. I asked the brothers, I said, is there, you know, like big statues of this goddess in the big temple there? And they said, oh, yeah. They said she is this giant woman, and in one hand she's holding the head of a giant. She chopped the head of this giant off, and she's holding his head in her hand. And I thought, that's the Jezebel kind of thing. And they said, it's very odd, but during the year, was 1 month when her followers, the men, dressed like women and they wear women's makeup. I thought, what in the world? Well, we were in this one particular city, and after the meetings, we ministered at night, and then we had to get up at 4 or 5 in the morning when it was still dark and start driving to drive all day to get to the place for the next meetings. I mean, it's really hot, brutal, bumpy rides and 12 hours and go 100 miles. I mean, just challenging. Everything was really rough back then. And that morning, Nancy and I were there in this little hotel room, rundown little place, and I'm trying to pack up stuff, and it's dark in the room, and I skinned my heel. I remember just at the base of the bed, it was wood. Oh, I skinned my heel. And it just was one of these things that was very painful. And I remember immediately the verse coming to mind from Genesis 3 about Satan. He'll bruise your heel, you'll crush his head. And I thought, all right, we're in a battle here. That's what it was. I'm just telling you what was going through my mind. We're in a battle here, but Satan loses. And I felt the Lord speaking to me as I prayed about this trip. Do what Elijah did on Mount Carmel and announce to the people the first day to come the next night, and we will ask the question, who is the real God, Yahweh or Kanaka Durga? And they had this massively loud sound system. I mean, you couldn't get away from it for quite a distance around the meetings. So all the people in their huts and in their apartment buildings, wherever they were staying and living, they were hearing this. And I gave an invitation. I said, if you are a Hindu priest, if you are a devotee of Kanaka Durga, I want to invite you to come tomorrow night, and we will ask the question, who is the real God, Yahweh or Kanaka Durga? And my dear brother, Yesu Padam, who had been stoned for his faith and who had been in some very difficult, life-threatening situations, he was actually afraid to translate. Well, that next night, the Lord really gave me a wonderful message. To whatever extent it was an anointed message, it's 100% the glory and goodness of the Lord. And he gave me this message on Kanaka Durga may dwell in this giant temple on the top of the rock, but it's God who created the rock and who created the world. And just this contrast between idolatry and the one true God. Now, normally in India, you don't preach against idolatry. You don't preach against how ugly the idols are. You preach about how beautiful Jesus is. And as they meet him, they turn for their idols. But sometimes I felt to give clear messages about idolatry. And I preached this message, and it seemed that the Holy Spirit fell powerfully. We had a tremendous altar call. People repenting to get right with God. And one man came under the power of a demon and started dancing around on the platform, dancing around under the power of Satan. And he began to confess, Kanaka Durga is not God. Kanaka Durga is not God. When the brothers challenged this demonized man, he began to confess, Kanaka Durga is not God. Not long after those meetings, there was a mild earth tremor right at the base of the mountain where the temple was, and part of it cracked. Right, not long after those meetings. And things heated up, for sure, for the local church. Hey, friends, this is just some of what I've experienced in India. That's one reason I'm here now for my 19th time. And what a precious day we had ministering to pastors and leaders and church planters in this morning, afternoon, and evening. 866-34-TRUTH. Talk about persecution, opposition, what would do for the Church of America today. Let's go back to the phones. Joshua in Atlanta, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, sir.
Hey.
You know, you asked the question, how possible is it to truly follow Jesus here in America without the persecution? And I think it is very possible. But here it looks a lot different than it does there. You know, there they have outward enemies, and here we have a more hidden, subtle enemies. You know, you always, not you, but studying the persecuted church, you hear Todd Middleton, you hear all these persecuted people say so loudly, so often, you hear it in different languages of, we don't pray for our own, you know, benefit. We pray for you guys in America. We know our enemies. Our enemies are visible. You know, our life depends on it. We don't have fake Christians here. You in America, your enemies are your materialism and your ease of salvation called. All this junk, all this junk that, you know, he says our enemies draw us closer to God because we either, you know, just like the story of the pastor in Romania you just told, we either live it out or we die. He said, "Your enemies, your enemies tear you away from the God who made you and love you." And I do think it's possible, very possible, to live a sincere disciple life here in America. But if we do that, we have to be, just like you ended your quote in your book, dramatically different than the culture around us. And in our society, I'm not trying to stand on a platform of better than anybody else, but in our society, it's a materialistic society. In our Christianity, it's a materialistic Christianity.
Yeah. And, Joshua, you nailed it. We got a break here, but sir, you nailed it. In fact, I'll tell the story about that when we come back, but right on. Let's take the challenge. Let's take the plunge. Let's do this.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Look, you know I shoot straight. You know I tell it like it is. I'm not trying to candy coat anything. I'm not trying to say things in such a way so as to gain some kind of bigger following. If what attracts you is the same truth that attracts me, if what attracts you is the same burden from the Lord that attracts me, if what attracts you is the same call to take up the cross and follow Jesus, that's what attracts you, that's what attracts me, then let's do this together. But I'm not going to water down the message. Friends, I'd be off radio tomorrow. I'd never be on the radio if I had to water down the message to come on. And I commend the stations that have me on the air. And I commend Salem Broadcasting. I commend the Truth Broadcasting Network. And on weekends, the American Family Radio and others that have me on. And He's Alive Broadcasting, different networks that carry the shows. I commend you for carrying the broadcast and saying to me, be who you are. Be who you are. You bring this message because we need it. I'm preaching to you as well as I'm preaching to me. We all need this wake-up call. Pastor Richard Wurmbrand, not long after he had come out of communist prison, Romania, 14 years of terrible suffering, imprisonment, 3 years of solitary confinement, unreal torture, unimaginable. It's unreal that he survived. He and his wife Sabina, she suffered terribly in a slave labor camp. He comes over to the States. He was doing a teaching at someone's home. One of my friends who's with the Lord now, along with Pastor Wurmbrand, who's with the Lord, was there at the meeting and was stunned by the quality of life of Pastor Richard Wurmbrand. And the end of the meeting, he said to Pastor Wurmbrand, why is it that we don't have communism to deal with here in America? Pastor Wurmbrand said to him, oh, you have something far worse. You have materialism. Friends, I don't know if we realize the challenge of being a genuine disciple in the midst of materialism, in the midst of greed, in the midst of carnality, in the midst of superficiality, in the midst of American culture. I don't know if we realize how difficult it is to live in the light of eternity when we are so filled with the things of this world. I was using an illustration ministering to pastors and leaders today. I spoke this afternoon on the importance of relationships. After all, it's a personal relationship with my friend Yesu Pano that brought me all the way over to India on this trip, my 19th time here. And the evening I talked about God sees the heart. If you're truly devoted to Him, He'll open the door. He'll raise you up. He will do the impossible on your behalf. Well, I used an illustration about golf today, and I know they don't know golf in India, but I was able to explain it because it wasn't so much about golf. It was a larger illustration about relationships, actually. It's a funny story. I'll tell you the story real quick. Pastor on a Sunday morning decided to call in sick and go play golf instead. He told his assistant pastor he's sick. Could the pastor preach for him? Yeah, the assistant pastor will cover it. And the pastor sneaks out with his golf clubs. He's going to play round of golf on an empty golf course because everybody's in church. And the angel of the Lord is incensed, and he says to God, Father, did you see this? He said, yes. He said, should I smite him? What should I do? And the Lord said, no. Give him a hole in one. What? Give him a hole in one? A hole in one? And the Lord said, yeah. Who's he going to share it with? Who's going to tell? And I used that illustration to talk about the importance of relationships and explained about golf and so on. And as I was explaining, I thought, not that the sport is sinful. Not that you're sinning if you play golf. Now, some it is sin because it takes you away from the Lord or it's an idol or an obsession. But in and of itself, nothing wrong with it. But I thought, what? How absurd that we get so into it. But you know what I'm saying? Here, you hit this, the ball goes in the hole and make it difficult. We get so into it. Other sports and other things, we get so consumed with it. How can it be? How can it be? How can we be so absorbed in the Lord and just so caught up with a million other things in this world? Friends, I am not praying for persecution to come to the Church of America. But I don't know right now how we're going to really live like disciples and how we're going to pick up our cross and follow Jesus without some opposition and without some testing and without some separation. I don't know how it's going to happen. And we need the Lord to quicken our hearts and show us what it really means to be his followers, to be his disciples. And again, I want to talk straight with you. I'm here in India. I don't have to make any excuses. I've been overseas well over 100 different trips. And, you know, just between, if you take India, Italy, and Korea, or, you know, three other countries, just over 50 trips just to those countries alone. And, you know, it's costly and it's challenging. And it can be draining, and it's one of the great privileges of my life that I get to do this. But friends, I'm not doing this to play a game. I'm not doing this to play a game. And if you believe in what we're doing, I'm asking you to stand with us. I'm asking you to pray. I'm asking you to help us. We really need a whole lot more people to stand with us and to help. I wrote an email literally on my knees this morning, knelt down by the bed here in my hotel because we're 10 and a half or 9.5 hours ahead. And I sent out an email to everyone on our email list, said, hey, we need your help. We need torchbearers. We need monthly supporters. And I'm asking for that again. It's for many of us, it's readily done. I know some would have to take a step in faith, but if the Lord speaks to you, do it. We need you to stand with us as torchbearers. We're asking for at least 100 new torchbearers this week through the radio broadcast. And we got a handful that responded so far. So if you're waiting, dive in. My thank you gift to all those who become monthly torchbearers, we'll send you three of my best debates ever. One with Rabbi Shmuley on Isaiah 53, one where I team with Dr. James White and we debate those that deny the deity of Jesus, and one where I debate a gay activist who claims to be a born-again Christian. It's about $60 retail value for all the debates, four DVDs total, 6 hours. My thank you gift if you become a torchbearer, and then every month we send you a free message, a new message every month. We send you, we give you access, free access to our online classes, my classes I teach at Fire School of Ministry. And then on top of that, you get a 15% discount to our online bookstore. That's all when you become a torchbearer, supporting us at least $25 or more per month. Hey, how about your church, your congregation, if you're a pastor leader, put us on your budget. See what you can do to help us as we really are on the front lines of world missions, front lines of Jewish evangelism, and front lines of moral culture revolution in America. Here's the number to call, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978, or stand with us by going to AskDrBrown.org, A-S-K-D-R Brown, AskDrBrown.org, and just clicking on support to become a monthly torchbearer. Thank you. You'll encourage me. When I get the report tomorrow of how many have called in and stood with us, it'll send a wave of encouragement to me all the way over here in India. 1-800-278-9978. Tomorrow's broadcast, we're going to cover some controversial stuff. I'm going to take issue with a recent quote from Pastor Rob Bell, as well as from a popular Christian blogger, young lady with so much good to say, and yet I think she's made some real errors about, quote, the culture wars. We'll talk about those things tomorrow as we focus on the world, moral and cultural issues. So become a torchbearer, 1-800-278-9978. Also, when you're calling, for $15, you're getting over $40 worth of teaching. I know we've never done anything like this, kind of crazy, but I wanted to do something a bit outrageous from India. My entire tape series on audio series on spiritual warfare and angels, demons, and deliverance. 24 hours of teaching on two CDs to listen to on your computer, your MP3 player. Just $15 postage paid instead of 40 plus postage. So take advantage of it. Life-changing, in-depth in the word. 1-800-278-9978. So call, order that. Become a torchbearer. You'll be blessed. We'll be blessed. My bottom line: let's not wait for persecution to come. Let's not wait for great shaking to come. Let's begin to live for God as serious disciples, whether by life or by death. Jesus, our Lord, has already given his life for us.